speaker for the evening. Please give warm welcome to Badusha from San Diego.
Welcome, my name is Badusha. I'm an alcoholic. Waka means hello or welcome in the Yupik Eskimo language. And I'm full-blooded Yupik Eskimo. That's why I look like this. I want to thank you, Paul, for stepping up to the plate. That was great. And happy birthday to the Daryl and Alan. 2 years is great. I also want to welcome the newcomers, specifically Thomas and Savannah. And Thomas has a black eye that he got from, what did you tell me? He got it in jail or?
Fell.
You fell? That's not what you told me earlier. And then Savannah got it, she got in a really bad accident. And you know what? I told them both that I wish I had my, all my mugshot pictures and, you know, when I was a street girl, you know, with the Hoochie Mama shorts and, you know. And I used to hate the way I looked. I always wanted to be blonde hair and blue-eyed because I thought that was beautiful. So my hair is incredibly straight. It will not perm. I tried and tried to perm it, and I tried to dye it. And you know those people that do the home dyes and their hair turn out orange? Well, my hair would not curl, it curled a little bit, and it turned orange. So I had the 5-inch heels, the Daisy Duke shorts, and I had sores all over my face, and I had sporadic teeth, and my hair was orange and kind of curly, so I had orange pubic hair in my head, you know? And I thought I looked cool, you know? I thought I was the shit, you know? So, you know what? And then on top of it, I went to jail. I don't know how many times I went to jail. And my mugshots, there were blood on me. And one mugshot was bloody. My hair all, you know, haired out. And now look at me. You like it? It's 16 years sobriety. You look like this, Armani. Salvation Armani. I just really want to tell you that, you know, my family in Alaska, in my Eskimo village, they're so Jerry Springer, you know. They are so, you know, they're drinkers and they're fighters and they're killers and they're molesters. They're just the roughnecks of the village. And, you know, I that's how I grew up and that's the way I was. I mean, I didn't molest anybody, but well, now I do. Now I'm kind of a cougarish, but anyway. Did I really say that on tape? All right. As long as we're getting honest, you know what? I really am, like, ashamed. I guess in this society, I'm ashamed of how old I am. But I got to start acting my age, you know. We lead a double life. And I'm going to say it. I'm 50 years old. You know, I'm 50 years old. And you know what? I got to start acting my age. Jesus Christ. You know, I was listening to, there's this one radio station I really like, and it's The Walrus. And it plays all the oldies, you know, all the oldies and goodies. And in between all these wonderful songs that you know all the words to and you're singing along in your car, they have commercials for burial plots and heart medication, Viagra. You know, it's like, oh, my God, I really am this old. But you know what? Those of you that are my age, you know, we had so much fun in the 60s, you know. I really think that the youth of these days are trying to recapture what we had, you know, and the old jokes. And we don't know why these jokes were funny, you know, like Coke, 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 Pepsi, Pepsi, Pepsi. Do you remember that? Nobody remembers it? I have old. Nope. Okay. Oh, it was the old Saturday Night Live. You know, your cheeseburger, cheeseburger, cheeseburger. Yeah, see, people remember. Yay! You know what? I just wanted to say, you know, out of my Jerry Springer family, I had a brain fart. My Jerry Springer family, out of my Jerry Springer family tree, my daughter on Wednesday made 9 years sober. And she at 13, you know, at 11 she was smoking marijuana. At 13 she was taking heroin and cocaine. And we were living in abandoned cars, and she learned everything from her mama. And we are both supposed to die like my family, you know, with their livers blown out. This talk is dedicated to my baby sister whose liver gave out, and all my brothers that are in long-term prison. And I can't help them, you know, I can't help them. But I am extremely, extraordinarily lucky, you know. I am lucky to get this age, you know. I'm lucky to take the moment and enjoy it. You know, I was looking at that lady with the face transplant, you know, and I'm criticizing myself how I look and thinking about plastic surgery, and but you know what? This face is a face that my daughter loves, you know, and I'm gonna treasure it like, you know, my daughter treasures. I have the money now to have plastic surgery, but I don't think I'm gonna do it. I think I'm just gonna try to do it this way, and you know, but besides this face, I went to the best parties with this face, you know. I got a lot of people bought me a lot of drinks because of this face. You know, if I had to pay my own way in the bars to hit my bottom, if I had to pay my own way, I'd still be out there trying to hit my bottom, you know. And they paid retail price in the bars, you know. I couldn't afford that. I was a barfly. Anyway, my sobriety is not very pretty, even though I'm 16 years sober. And when you're new, you think that when I'm 16 years sober, wow, my life is going to be incredible. You know, I'll be the nicest person around. I'll be so fucking spiritual, you know, that, you know, I wouldn't be like that Eskimo. Hell no, you know. You know, but life throws you curves. It really, then this program works slow. It really works really, really slow. And, wow, you know what? This room is entirely too bright. I can see everybody's faces, and it's freaking me out. But you know what? I want to sound good up here. I want to sound good up here. But my sobriety doesn't reflect that. My sobriety hasn't always been pretty. In fact, I text my friend, and he texts me back this, if you don't mind that I read it. He texts me back. He said, "You'll be just fine. Be honest. Be you. It got you a seat in AA. It's what we relate to you in most, what we most relate about you. Whatever happens to that will be perfect." So I appreciate that. You know, when I first came to AA, I called up AA, and I said, "I think I'm an alcoholic, and I need to stop drinking." I was crying, and the guy that answered the phone, by this time I was in Hawaii, because when I was in Alaska, I would almost freeze to death lots of times, so I moved to Hawaii so I won't freeze to death when I pass out. So I moved to Hawaii and I passed out everywhere, and I got tan, really tan, but mostly just on one side. You know? And I Anyway, I called up AA and I said, I'm an alcoholic. I think I'm an alcoholic, and I need to learn how to stay sober. And he said, "What street are you on?" It was 8:05. And he said, "What street are you on?" And I said, "Pa'okalani. It's in Waikiki." And he said, "I am in the Kentucky Apartments." And he said, "You are right across the street from the community center on Pa'okalani. Right across the street. The meeting's going to start at 8 o'clock. Go there right now before you think about it." And I said, "Oh, okay." So I hung up, ran across the street, and I'm sitting there and I'm crying, right? I look a mess. Oh, my God. You two look much nicer than I did. But I was crying and looked around. It was all men, right? And I'm like, "Yeah, this does work." And I'm sitting there. I'm like, "Oh, okay." And then I noticed these guys were more feminine than I was. You know, way more feminine than I was. So I left because I didn't want what they had. And they certainly didn't want what I had. So I went to my this drunk ass bar I used to go to, and then I got drunk. I don't know how many days in a row. Maybe months. I don't know. But anyway, my favorite bartender, she said, "I think I'm not." I told her I'm an alcoholic, and I went to an AA meeting, but there was, you know, it was just a whole bunch of gay men, and she, I'm not talking bad about gay people. My best friends are gay, so it doesn't matter. It just was happened to my mindset at that time. And so she said, I think I'm an alcoholic too. And I said, "Well, there's a meeting called 12 Coconuts on Waikiki Beach, and at 7 o'clock in the morning, and as soon as we wake up before we start drinking, let's go there." And she said, "Okay." She said, at that time I was homeless, and she said, "You can sleep at my house. After my shift, we'll go drink and sleep at my house." So I said, "Okay. As long as she says drink." If she said drink, I'm there. So we drank that in that bar. I always drank for free at that bar, pretty much. And then we crashed at her house, and then in the morning I was shaken, and we went to 12 Coconuts, and we introduced ourselves. We just listened, and you know, there were men and women, and and they were talking about sponsorship. We didn't know what the hell that was, and afterwards it was very surprising when they held hands and prayed. You know, that really touched me. Pissed me off, but it touched me as well. You know, I was like, "Oh my God, it's another Jesus freak show." You know, and so we held each other's hand, and we prayed, and we ran away from them. We left. We didn't talk to anybody. And she said, "Sponsorship, sponsorship. We have to get a sponsor. We have to get a sponsor." And I say, "Yes." And at that time, I had the know-it-all disease. I knew everything, right? And I had such a big ego, and she said, "We have to get a sponsor. Since you've been to a meeting before, would you please be my sponsor?" And I'm like, "Well, of course." You know? So I became her sponsor, my very first sponsee, and my first executive order as a sponsor was, "Let's go get a drink." So she said that was a great idea. So we went and got drunk again. You know what? I got to tell you this. I had fun drinking. You know, if you didn't have fun drinking, you're an idiot. You know, because people that stay home and drink, I don't understand that. I don't understand that. There was so much hilarity. I was just more nuts than, I can't even tell you the shenanigans I pulled and the bar fights. You know, the bar fights. It was awesome. And then, at that time, I was homeless, but before then, I was trying to hang on to my daughter, even though I was an alcoholic, and I was a single mom, and when she was like 3 years old, 3 or 4 years old, I And she remembers this. I had no money for a babysitter, but I had to go drink, and I didn't have money to go to the convenience store so I can stay home and drink and watch her. So I had to go be a barfly, and so I had to lock her in the apartment, and I'd tell her, you'll be okay. And she'd cry, she'd say, no, don't lock me, don't leave me in here. And I'd leave her in there every night, and I'd go be a barfly. And sometimes, I don't know when I'd get up, you know, and she'd be home, she'd have a lot of food. But, if you know, I'd sit there in the bar hoping somebody buy me a drink, and I'd think if there was a fire, you know, if there was a fire, you know, she'd be dead, you know. And so I'd go home, and she'd be crying, you know. I don't know how many times I left her like that, and she remembered these. And I just got to be honest about that, because I, you know, I have a lot of living amends to make to my daughter. But I tell my daughter, like, in drunken stupors, and in, like, when I'm waking up shaking, then I started going to this group called the Happy Hour Group in Waikiki, and I wouldn't get sober. I mean, I'd see other people, you know, the people that we came in with, you remember them. You know, when you first come to AA, you remember certain people, and you cannot relate to the old times. You can only relate to people that have the same time as you. You know, so I made friends with these newcomers, you know, the other newcomers, like how newcomers stick together. And they start getting sober, and they start, you know, getting apartments, and they start getting jobs, and they start getting relationships and nicer clothes, and I was losing teeth, you know. I couldn't get sober, and I was the smartest person in the whole damn world, you know. And I was certainly smarter than you drunks, but that's what I thought. And I couldn't get it. And I would lock my daughter in an apartment by herself. And then pretty soon I couldn't pay the rent anymore. And then they did an eviction. And then we were living in abandoned cars. And then she got taken away from me. And I remember that. Before she got taken away from me, even before we lost that apartment, she would hold my hand, and I would be in my crazy-ass, super cool outfit, and she'd hold my hand, her little hand, and she'd say, come on, let's go to happy hour, and maybe today you'll get sober. Come on, Mom. And she'd have big tears in her eyes, and she'd try not to cry, but she'd tell me, you know, let's go, and maybe you'll get sober today. And so she dragged me to meetings as soon as I wake up. And then I lost her. CPS took her. But when they took her, she wouldn't talk to me. She wouldn't cry. She would not look at me. I remember putting her on the plane because she was going to go to her father in Las Vegas. She wouldn't look at me. She was just so incredibly angry. Angry little girl. They put her on a plane, and then I drank and started shooting. I never did shoot, you know. And I started putting needles. I just start running after for oblivion immediately. When I got sober, and I got her back through the court system. I got her back when I was 3 years sober. And when she was, 11, she started doing pot. And then 13, she started taking heroin and cocaine. And she learned everything from her mama, you know. And all that anger she had. And she thought that she's going to come into the house and be the mama, you know. Because she was always the mama. She was always the one taking care of me. And so we had a struggle for reverse roles. And you know what? I wish I had a clock, because I got to time myself, because I don't have a clock on me. I can't see a clock here. But anyway, I don't know what time is am I supposed to stop talking. What am I time is supposed to talk?
8:55.
8:55, okay. Well, anyway... Her story and my story is not unlike anybody's in my families. So I'm really, really blessed. I just want to tell you how much I love my daughter. I want to say that in my sobriety, in early sobriety, in this know-it-all that I was, I thought, when a person has 16 years of sobriety, that their life would be awesome, awesome, I didn't know that, when I see old-timers that are going through a really hard time, I would look down on them. I said, why aren't they doing the program? They have a shitty life and a shitty program. And I'm like, I would never be like that. And then my life was like that. In long-term sobriety, my life was, I was homeless for 3.5 years. Was it 3.5 years, Natalie? It was a long time. And I had a lot of kidney problems. I had surgery on my breast. I have chronic depression as it is. And for a person to, be homeless in AA with long-term sobriety and try to come in, I still spoke. I declined a lot of speaking. And a lot of my sponsees left me because they were ashamed of me because I was living in my car. I was struggling to stay sober. I was struggling to stay sober. And I was thinking about those old-timers that I took, their inventory. And now I understand that life happens. I really think when you look around and you see old people with time that are going through a hard time, we have so much to learn. They're hanging on. They're doing the deal like I was doing the deal. I was still sponsoring people. I was still being in service, and they need you. You don't know it, but you need the people that are going through a hard time so you can watch them and see that you can stay sober no matter what. Because it took a blow to my big ego to walk into these rooms with all this time and take birthdays after birthdays and years of being homeless. It felt like eternity. And I felt like every day that I had to stay sober. And you know what? It's a part of my story. And my kidneys are well. I just had another bump with my kidneys a couple of days ago. And I was supposed to move to Hawaii a year ago or so, but my kidneys failed. And in fact, I was supposed to speak here. And I decided to move to Hawaii, but my kidneys failed, and I couldn't go to Hawaii or speak here. And So those old-timers that are going through a hard time, I suggest you not to take their inventory, because it could happen to you. Karma is a boomerang. It'll hit you back hard. And I think when you see somebody going through a really hard time, just tell them it'll be okay and that they're valuable. And now I'm really glad that I was homeless for 3 years. Now I know, what I'm more glad about is that there was this asshole. I mean, he, in the rooms, he would take my inventory on a group level. You know what? That's a no-no. He used to always tell people he's a Christian, too. That just irritates me. But anyway, not that he was a Christian, but he would just brag about it. But anyway, he knew that I'd stand up for the 10th tradition. And when he would take my inventory about me being homeless on a group level. And I didn't want to make amends to him, so I'd keep my mouth shut. And one time, he was bothering me so much. I had to go AA to save my life, right? So I would go to AA. He'd do his shenanigans and laugh at me and, him and his cronies. And I'm sitting there trying to survive. He was bothering me. It was bothering me so much. And I slept and I dreamt that he was there. And I said, I forgive you. In my dream, I said, I forgive you, and it's okay. You're going through what you have to go through. And I woke up from that dream, and I was so high, I was so happy that AA is in my soul. It's in my subconscious. That I'm a different person. Before, you know, growing up, I would harpoon your ass, you know. And now when I see that person, they still act the same. But you know what? I smile because I'm not that person. I'm a better person than I ever was, you know, and it's, I'd rather be this way. And it feels so good now, you know, with God and with the spirit of forgiveness. It's a beautiful way to, you can look at yourself in the mirror and say, wow, you are changed, you know. Anyway, another thing I did was, which was miraculous, was when I had 8.5 years sober, I was asked to be the main speaker at a convention in upstate Washington, and I was married at the time, and my husband had like 5 years more than me, and we went up there on a Monday. I was supposed to speak on a Saturday, and because there's lots of things that happen right away, like boom, 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 when a convention's going on, right at countdown, a lot of fires to put out. So we knew this was going to happen, so we wanted to be in service. So we went up to Washington on a Monday, and I wanted to see the program. My husband, so he went to get the program. I really wanted just to see my name on the program, you know. And there it is, you know, was my name, Saturday Night Speaker. And then I look at the rest of the program, and it say AACMA, AA/CMA. And I'm like, what the hell? What is CMA? I thought we're not supposed to be associated with anything else. And then I read that there was a church service and a baptism at an AA convention. And so I went, and my husband got all upset, and I got all upset. And so we went to the committee and said, what is this? What is CMA? The Christian Motorcycle Association. It was AA/CMA. And I said, we're not supposed to be affiliated with anything, and we can't endorse or condone anything. And the head of the guy said, I have 20 years. How much time do you have? And I said, 8.5 years, like I'm a big girl, right? And he said, shut up. And I'm like, whoa. So we went at it, like, God, I was talking about a lot. You know, we can't do this. He's telling me to shut up. People were getting upset, like, you know, just standing up. Chairs were flying. And so I got dragged away. I called my sponsor, and she said, you got to make amends to him for your behavior. You are right. The traditions are right. But you have to make amends. I'm like, oh, I got to make amends. So I went to make amends to him. And then we went into another scuffle, huge scuffle, bigger scuffle than before. And then I called my sponsor. I got dragged away. Called my sponsor. She said, you got to make amends for the amends that you made. That's why the steps are in order, the character defects. You have to list them, you know. No justification, no hollering, no sabotage, no, you know, blah, blah, blah. List your character defects before you get to the knife. But anyway, so I was supposed to just read the 10 tradition out loud. I can't find the 10 tradition right now. I'm not a big book, know-it-all. But the 10th, okay. Oh, right here, Jesus Christ. Another thing that happened was, today, I want to tell you, I set my alarm, and it didn't go off, and I was taking a nap. And my dog, Gria, she's not a yapper. She was barking off a storm. I don't know what she was barking. I'm like, she woke me up on time for this meeting. I'm like, oh my God. But anyway, on the 10 traditions, my sponsor said, when you go and talk to the committee members, you have to read this. Number 10, the long form. No AA group or member should ever in such a way implicate AA, express any opinion outside controversial issues, particularly those of politics, alcohol reform, or sectarian religion. The Alcoholics Anonymous groups oppose no one. Concerning such matters, they can express no views whatsoever. So I wasn't arguing with anybody. People were, you know, attacking my, you know, coming up, not just the committee members, but these were bikers. These were bikers. They were smelly. They were leathered up, muscly, tattooed, hairy. And that was just the women. You know? And they wanted to fight me, literally. And I couldn't fight them anymore. We have stopped fighting everyone and everything. I was just supposed to read this. And I told the guy, if you want to take me off to be the main speaker, I cannot speak for Christian Motorcycle Association. I am not affiliated with them in any way. And he said, your name is already all over the place. We already told everybody you're an Eskimo and you're gonna say it and you're not gonna talk about the 10th tradition. So I just said, okay. So I did my pitch. And then I talked about the 10th tradition. And I thought I was going to get hanged or nailed or would have burned at the stake, whatever. But I had to say it, and it was scary, very volatile. 800. You want to piss off 800 to 1,000 speakers, bikers, you know. I told my story, and I told about my experience that I almost got beat up several times. And I had a standing ovation. And they all stood up and clapped. Because I want this for my daughter and I want this for my granddaughter, or I don't have a granddaughter yet. But I don't have any grandchildren yet. I want them to have the doors. I need traditions. The traditions keep us safe and keep us from arguing, from controversial issues. That was very hard. That was not as hard as the 3.5 years of being homeless. But I acted like an idiot in those 3.5 years. I acted so dry. I was so dry I was scared of matches, you know. I resorted to all my old ways, you know, my instant gratification. Because I just wanted to feel better. There's a page in here. 3, 3, 3, 4, 6, I think it is. Yeah, 3, 4, 6. This woman on page 3, 4, 6, she, for a while I floated on pink cloud. Then I cried for a year and raged for another year. My feelings returned and then began to settle down to a reasonable size. Above all, I healed spiritually. I love that. I cried for a year because I, you know, and I raged for another year. But I stayed sober, and then I healed spiritually. You know, I have really bad kidneys that's going to kill me. And I was talking yesterday to my daughter about what's going to happen when I die, you know. And we're talking openly about it. It's not a bad thing. The Eskimos have a better way of looking at death. So I told her, when I want to have a big party when I die, and I want people to dance and have fun, and I want pictures of me in all my sobriety. You know, my sobriety. I got to backtrack a little bit. What time is it? I got to tell you this. You know, when the 3.5 years, I had one sponsee that would not let go of me. She would not let go of me. I was so embarrassed about my sobriety. She would pick me up. She would find my car and it'd have no gas in it. This is in long-term sobriety. She'd put gas in my car. She'd feed me and we'd go to a meeting. And this woman, she could not stay sober no matter what. She was a heroin addict. She got sober on her 21st birthday. And she was full of sores, just like me. And she and I talked about suicide, and she said, you know, what about this program? You know, what about this, you know, staying in service? And she took care of me, and I took care of her, and I talked about the big book with her, and we did the deal. We went to, you know, I taught her about service, and then after I had my surgery, and after I got well and I got a really good job, I called her up because she was living in Boston at this time, last November, and I said, to pay you back for the time she took care of me, I want to take you to a Hawaii AA convention. And so I took her to Hawaii, and we went to the convention, and there was a meeting. We went at 7 o'clock in the morning. There's a whole bunch of us in our surfboards. We were holding our surfboards, and there was a circle, and we did the meeting. And also, I'm kind of claustrophobic, and so we went deep sea diving. I'm kind of scared of heights, so we went skydiving. I'm scared to get tattoos, so I got a big one on my back. It has the raven, which is my amakua, and the A symbol, and hibiscus, because I got sober in Hawaii. And we just had a blast. And also, I want to tell you about every Wednesday night at the PB Alana Club, we have a group called the Waka Group. Waka means hello or welcome in the Yupik Eskimo language. And what we do is we take my cell phone. We call up my village up in Alaska, which is near the Arctic Circle. It's south of the Arctic Circle, near the Bering Straits, near Russia, near Siberia. And those Eskimos sit around a speakerphone, and we sit around a speakerphone. We've been carrying the message for almost 7 years. And you know, it's a very spiritual thing because they can't see us. Imagine if you had only one meeting a week. And you can't even see the people you're talking to. You can't go to lunch. You know, you can't go to coffee. You can't do conventions. And it's my dream that I would love to find a way for them to come down to the San Diego convention and see all the people they talk to and get to know over here over the phone. And I encourage you to come to that meeting. You know, the service and, you know, and the sponsee that stuck by me, who's keeping who sober, you know? And that person that was leading the that convention where the CMA, AACMA, he's no longer ahead of that. He was ahead of that for 12 years. That's why we have to rotate, because we get very egotistical, and so do I. So he taught me a lot, that I have to give up positions, you know, because I'm very egotistical, and I forgive him too. You know what? I have like huge resentment against my family and my stepfather who molested me a lot, and I've forgiven him too. You know, I mean, every day it says daily reprieve. So when I'm feeling hateful toward him, I have to say, I forgive you. And when you do that, a Skeeter that has 45 years, he told me, Bedusha, my name, means the soul. And when I say, I forgive you, I could feel just softness and like breath. Every one of us have resentments. If we could do that practice, I forgive you. It's just a freeing, you feel free and light, you know. This is an amazing program. I am a different person. My daughter is a different person than she would have been, you know. It's amazing. I encourage you to do what we did, you know. You're going to have such a blast. And thank you very much for having me as your speaker.